Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, September 1st. I'm Ray Graff. Our favorite bird experts, Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart, are back to share their birding knowledge and answer your questions. And birds. We've done 9,000 bird shows. What else is there to say about birds? There always seems to be something new to say about birds. If you want to talk about birds, give us a call for Pete's sake. 800-348-2551. We have an hour to fill. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or email your bird questions. I prefer not photographs, although some people have already done that today. Email voxpop@wamc.org or call us. 800-348-2551. Birds, you know the drill. Rich Guthrie, Julie Hart, and your calls after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Birds Today, and when we do a bird talk, we bring in Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He's the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. Julie Hart is the project coordinator of the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. She has a focus on bird conservation and citizen science. These two know a lot about birds, and they love them dearly. If you love birds dearly, call us. It's kind of an intervention. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email the program with your bird observations at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org for the email, and 800-348-2551 for the phone number. Julie Hart, it is wonderful to see you. How are you doing?
I am doing good. I'm enjoying fall migration, which is already well underway.
Yeah. You know, The birds in my backyard, my wife and I were just talking about this. They're going nuts. The little birds are, I don't know if there's trouble, but they are, for the last couple of days, there has been so much activity. It's been insane. Rich Guthrie, is this that time of year or is there a problem?
No problem. Really? That time of year. We're rushing into the peak of their get out of town day.
What's happening with you, by the way? Anything good?
Things is good.
Yeah?
Yes. Can't complain. Life is churning on, and we're happy-dappy-do.
Saw a hummingbird yesterday. Still have a hummingbird coming in.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
and the challenge is, when will the last male leave? The males are the first to go, the first noticeable ones to go, the adult males.
Yeah, why?
Oh, because they have the red gorget, and all the rest of them, females and young, have a plain, more or less creamy white throat.
And because that the they're color-coded, they got to leave early? What is that?
No, that's their way. But any ones that may be coming through now, for some reason, may be lingering, or more likely they are coming from elsewhere and passing through.
Okay.
And at some point, the last of the males will be gone, and then the gals will be taken over.
Well, we got a stack of email already, and I can't believe we have so many. They've been coming in all day, and this one came in from Ryan in the Shire, and he sent a picture. I emailed it to you guys because it was a nice color picture. I tried printing it, and our black and white printer, it looked, you know, worse than the Zapruder film. It was impossible to understand anything. This is what Ryan writes. A few weeks ago in Lenox, I saw a bird. Good start. A little larger than a purple finch, orange head and neck, yellow torso and body, predominantly black wings, black around its eyes, not a peep, so didn't show up on the Merlin app. Any ideas? Radio-friendly picture attached. That's funny, Ryan. All right, Julie, you had a look at the color photo. What do you think?
I did. So it looks to me like a scarlet tanager.
Okay.
And one of the big clues there is the red body and the all-black wings.
Mm.
And then it also has like a pretty substantial bill for a smaller songbird. So, it looks like a nice male scarlet tanager to me.
Okay. Rich, do woodpeckers migrate?
Some do, some don't. The flicker migrates out of town.
What does a flicker look like?
It's a big woodpecker.
Yeah.
Basically brown with yellow wing linings underneath the wing and a big white tail light, the rump patch.
Okay.
And you see them mostly on the ground eating bugs.
Well, the slightly smaller ones are the checkered ones.
Downey and Harry, they stay through the year.
They do. Okay. They've been zipping around our neighborhood quite in good numbers, I would say. Janny in Rotterdam writes in, my daughter and I have been wondering this. If a pet bird got out of the house, would instinct kick in and make them fly south to a warmer climate? Most pet birds cannot survive around here in the winter. That is an interesting question. So does domestication of some extent, or at least being in a cage inside, rob them of their abilities, their sensibilities to go south?
Not necessarily. It depends a lot on the species, how long it's been in captivity, where through over the years through genetic inbreeding, whether it's lost those basic instincts. But on the other hand, some of them do. The starling is a good example of that. That was brought over as a cage bird, and they are, in our area, they're mainly year-round residents, but we get a lot of them migrating through this time of year, and they'll be heading south with the blackbirds and the grackles.
Mm. Go ahead, Julie.
I was just going to say, I think a lot of the parrots, if they escape, they end up just hanging around until they perish, usually, or yeah, until their owners can recapture them.
And how would you go about doing that?
You would just try to entice them with food and try to catch them with a net. Yeah.
All right. Wasn't there a thing, I think we've talked about this before, where there were a lot of parrots in a part of Long Island?
Yeah, the monk parakeet.
Yeah.
That was a bird that either was released or escaped from captivity, mm-hmm, and made itself right at home. Our climate is very similar to their natural home climate, which is southern South America. And they managed to survive very well in our area. They considered a nuisance for several reasons. Number one is that they are a fruit eater, and the orchard growers, the orchard folks in the valley were concerned about their presence around their fruit farms. But the other thing is they built a very large stick nest, and that was raising some concerns with the power companies where they were building a nest on electric power poles, whether or not they'd be ignited and cause a fire. But they managed to do very well in our area for a parrot.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah, they have these huge stick nests. They're like colonial groupings of these birds. And I think because they have so many of them like hanging out together, and they have such a like protected nest that they can spend their whole, they roost in there all winter as well. So it keeps them protected a little bit from the elements as well. So there's quite
That's
a few of
cool.
them that are breeding on Long Island, New York City area.
Do they talk?
They squawk.
Yeah,
they wouldn't speak words as you're walking underneath.
No.
Hey, you, bird brain.
No mimicking.
All right, this is from Susan. I used to hear cuckoos every summer, but I haven't heard any this year. Did something happen to them?
I would say it hasn't been the best year for cuckoos. You know, they tend to come and go depending on the food availability. So whenever we get those really big outbreaks of tent caterpillars and the spongy moths, that's when we tend to have a lot more of them around, and we tend to hear them a lot more. There's always a few, but we don't have really good years unless there's a big outbreak.
Yeah. We have two kinds of cuckoos in our area, one with
that.
A yellow bill and the other with a black bill and other markings, but they're not quite as good as the old world component that can tell time. They're not so good at that.
Julie, didn't you go overseas to Europe recently, not too long ago?
Yes,
yeah,
we did.
Do they have cuckoos? I mean, they have cuckoo clocks aplenty in Germany and Switzerland.
Yeah, they have the original cuckoo that makes that cuckoo. Yeah, they have those cuckoos that make that sound. Yeah. So I did. I heard those in Switzerland. I was in Switzerland.
When you were in Switzerland, did you see anything else of note bird-wise?
Well, we took a detour one day to see some bee eaters, which are really beautiful little birds.
The name is bee eater
because they actually catch bees, and then so they'll catch a bee and then they whack it against a twig or something to get the stinger off. And
they
then
whack
they
it against
them.
A twig.
Yes.
Genius.
Yeah.
So they don't eat the twig and then spit it out like you're spitting out a pit of a cherry?
No, they don't. They try to avoid the stingers. And but they're beautiful. They're like little rainbows. I feel like they've got like red and yellow and blue and brown. And they're like so pure, so pretty. And there are not many of them in Switzerland. They're really only like one place where they are. They're breeding. So we did take a detour to see them. That was nice.
Rich, you ever see a bee eater?
I have, but not in Switzerland. And one thing interesting about the bee eaters and many of the other European bird species, that they too are expanding their range northward. The bee eater is now found irregularly in the UK and north into Germany and the like. So as many of our bird species, recently, I might add to that, we have had numerous sightings of swallowtail kite. Now, you want to look that one up and see the picture of the swallowtail, that most magnificent bird in the air.
Describe it for me.
They're a large hawk with a black and white pattern, very dark, black and white pattern, and a long forked tail. And they have such a graceful way of flying. They catch dragonflies on the wing. Uh-huh. They're so agile. But they're typically a southern bird. You go to South Florida to see them. And now they're showing up in places in Massachusetts, in New York, in Illinois, Minnesota. And this is a recent kind of phenomenon. They've been expanding their range. They actually nested in Massachusetts.
You know, evolutionarily speaking, it's amazing to me to go back to the bee eaters that these birds could have evolved to eat bees. I'd love to know the first bee that tried it.
Oh, yes. So you're absolutely right on target there. That's something, that profound thought that occurs every time I see one of these special adaptations. Yeah. When did this start and how did it spread? How did they learn and then become the specialists in it?
So you thought I had a profound thought, huh?
I do, actually.
That's amazing.
Right?
You know, I got to say, I feel that I have a lot of profound thoughts. What'd you say?
I say I'm going to write this down.
Okay, write it down, Rich. Thanks very much. 800-348-2551. It's another profound edition of Birding with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. Back with your calls coming up. Guitarist Ronnie Earle there doing a Pharoah Sanders song, Themby, here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Birds Today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. And let's go to the phones. We'll go back to the email a little later on. Nancy is in Wilton. Hello, Nancy in Wilton.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Two real quick. One, my son and his girlfriend, she's got an app on her phone that can recognize bird songs. We all of a sudden heard the strange calling here. And we have lots of birds around, lots of crows, but it didn't sound like a crow. So I got up to go see what it was. And here they're already at the door, you know, looking. And her app identified it as a raven. Hmm. And I didn't know that we had ravens. Well, it came back again this afternoon all by itself. Is it a raven? Is there a way to actually, you know, what do I look for?
More than likely it is, because the raven is a newcomer in town and they have made themselves very comfortable. They're expanding their range throughout the region, New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut. Yes, mm-hmm. Welcome to our town.
Oh, wow. Wonderful. And then the other question is, lots and lots of hummingbirds, weren't a lot this spring, but a whole bunch of them now. I'm imagining a bunch of them are newcomers into my yard. And I got about 5 feeders up, change it every day. And there's 2 of them right in front of me. I'm having a problem with bees. So the bees this time of year, I think they get kicked out of the hive and they're all starving for sugar. And they're fighting with the hummingbird. I saw one carpenter bee chase it. He chased the hummingbird away. So I'm putting out dishes of syrup for the bees away from the hummingbird feeders. Do you know of any other strategy that could help keep those two from fighting with each other?
I don't know.
I don't. I have the same problem. I get a lot of yellow jackets, particularly going at my hummingbird feeder. I don't have a good solution.
My observation is that the hummingbirds kind of tough it through and make it into the feeder anyway. They kind of do a sidestep on the bees.
And they'll chase them away. I've seen them do that too.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually they're bigger. Yeah.
They're going to win that battle.
They can wedge their way in there. They usually don't. It doesn't slow them down too much.
All right.
The one that's the nastiest is the white-faced hornet, which I got to tell you. Not a pleasant experience. And they're very aggressive when they're hungry.
Yes.
So I'm doing the best.
Yeah,
well,
you
got to
get
you.
Some of those bee-eater birds over there, Nancy, you know? Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. And by the way, Julie, you showed me the picture of the bee-eater. One of the most pretty birds out there.
Yeah, definitely look it up. That's the European bee-eater.
Okay, and it's multicolored, and so
it's very multicolored. There's a lot of other species all over.
Are they all colorful and
bright? They're all pretty colorful, but they have different color patterns, different colors. Some are like turquoise, and just crazy colors.
You know, and so again, talking about evolution, is that to attract bees? That color to look like flowers and whatnot. I know if I go outside in the backyard with a shirt, that's very bright and green or blue or whatever. They're zipping right over, or red, and their bees are all over me.
And hummingbirds will come at you, too, if they think you're a flower.
Yeah, most birds don't think I'm a flower, though.
And we're not seeing the whole of it. You know, the birds and bees, not to get into that conversation.
No, let's not do that.
But in any event, they see a color spectrum outside of our visible range.
Oh, yeah, we've talked about this.
Yeah,
yes.
Ultraviolet.
And so, it'd be very interesting to see what the ultraviolet or infrared patterns on a bee eater are outside of our visual range of colors.
Mm-hmm.
Can you get on that, Julie, when you go next time?
I would love to. Just
take a FLIR infrared camera and check it out?
Yeah.
All right, let's do that.
Cool.
Meantime, while we're discussing that, let's go to Martha in Gansvoort. Martha, you're on.
Hi. I had an extraordinary experience. I came home and was opening the back room door, and this huge bird was sitting on a metal chair that I had out near my garden. And it definitely wasn't a turkey, and it was the size of one. So I took a picture, and I called up a rehabber I know, and he said, well, what did you think it was? And I said, an eagle? And he said, well, he would be right down. And he came over as well as an expert on the raptors. And it was indeed an immature eagle. And they told me that eagles, when they get wet, they cannot fly. And this was when that very heavy rain fell a few weeks ago. And so he had a huge butterfly net, but it was eagle size, and he chased it down the hill and got it, and they were going to give it fluids and see if it, when it dried off, it would be able to fly. But they told me that there were other things that were happening to the eagles. They'd been called on quite a few eagle calls, and if they eat one pellet of lead, that can kill them, and all the rodenticides that people put out are killing the eagles. And then, of course, they mentioned West Nile virus, but they were hopeful that, you know, he'd be all right. But I called up later, and I found he'd died, and they sent him out to Syracuse to be, autopsy.
Yeah.
But it was extraordinary.
Oh, boy. You guys want to comment on that?
Yeah, I do. That pesticides, that especially the rat control pesticides that are out there, are taking a huge toll on our predators and scavengers. And there is a product out there that I'd like to suggest that as an alternative, because it doesn't harm the hawks, the owls, the eagles, the foxes, the cats, or the kids. And I'll give you the name, but I'm not promoting it. I'm suggesting it as...
Do you own any stock in the company, sir?
I do not.
Are you a certified retailer, sir, or a wholesaler?
No, sir.
Then you may say the name.
And I vouch for that. And... it is called RatX, RAT-X.
Yeah.
And it's a vegetable-based rodenticide that has no non-target species after effects.
Well, if it'll kill the rats, how do you know it won't kill something else?
Oh, because they've worked on that. And the way that the bad one kills other things is that it has a lasting... blood thinner that causes bleeding out on the unintended victims, which includes all of those characters. This one is specific to the physiology of the rodent, and it has no effect on the other non-rodent critters.
Okay. Well, Martha,
including foxes and dogs and cats.
Yeah, I just want to second that it is a huge problem, both the rodenticides, but also and also the lead. And you know, obviously, we've been trying to phase out lead fishing gear for years, but there is also a lead ammunition alternative as well that I would recommend people use, because a lot of these raptors and like turkey vultures and eagles are eating those carcasses that don't get found.
Yeah.
And so if you kill a deer and it gets away, you know, that lead can end up in the system and in these birds and kill them.
Well, I'm sure you're correct, and I'm sure that it makes perfect sense. But you could say, well, they've been shooting lead shot for well over 100+ years. Have we, you know, have we been able to sort of keep an eye on what the population was like back then? In other words, is the effect overstated today, or are there more people shooting lead today? We know that there were lead fishing weights and there were lead. God, how long have they been using lead to shoot? Long, long time.
Long time. And yes, and you might suggest that there were more to go around.
Maybe.
I don't like to say that we could afford to lose them, but the loss may not have been as noticeable as it is now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
But this pesticide thing is all those little black boxes that you see around every building throughout the area contains those rodenticides in it. And that's those little critters, when they run out of there, they're running around like drunken little critters.
Yeah.
Make easy targets for a raptor that may be hungry. And down it goes, one after the other.
You know, such progress was made on the eagle repopulation here in New York State after DDT.
Right.
And this is still a problem today.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
And,
it's terrible.
And because it's proliferating. I mean, building and grounds managers don't seem to have another tool in their box, and they need to have some sort of control.
Yeah.
And so this is their go-to thing. We need to turn that around like we did with DDT and Eldrin.
So in this case, then, it might be regulations which would be needed.
It's hard to regulate that sort of thing because it's a necessary evil out there. And if that's the only tool you have, that's the only tool you use. We need to widen the toolbox.
Okay. Number here is 800-348-2551. I mean, even if you have an optimistic thing to say, please feel free to call in. Maggie in Tivoli. Maggie, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about house sparrows. So I have a large bird feeder that has sunflower seeds in it, and a large flock of house sparrows likes to visit it. However, they seem to throw away a ton of the seeds, like almost to the point of having to refill it almost every day, probably multiple times a day. So what we did is we hung a tray underneath the bird feeder to try to catch all the seeds, but the house sparrows seem to now not understand how to use the bird feeder. So I guess my question is, number one, why are they throwing out so many of the seeds, and is there a way to both have the seeds still be caught by the bird feeder and that the house sparrows can still use it?
Julie, you want to have had it first?
If you have only sunflower seed, then it sounds like that there must be some bad seeds in the batch that you have. And so birds very quickly and easily can determine if the seed is good enough inside for them to eat it, like if it's still solid and hasn't rotted and there's no like insects or something like that in there. So they can tell by the weight and how it feels. So if they're picking it up and just throwing it out, then it could be that you just have like a bad batch and you should try getting a different batch. But I will say also that like house sparrows are kind of fussy, and they tend to just like blue jays, they tend to just like toss a lot of food on the ground as it is. Like, I have that problem too. There's somewhat of a, like, you're going to get some loss.
So
I guess,
in addition to being
saying
annoying, they're also slobs.
They're messy, yes.
Why are you looking at me that way, Rich?
Well, no, I think I agree with you, Ray.
Ah, just, that's rare.
You know, I was looking for some upbeat here.
All right. Anything else to say, Rich?
Yeah. You know, they house sparrows do not have very sophisticated taste. If you want to just keep them happy and away from the good stuff, throw some good, bad stuff out there. You know, little bread scraps and stuff like that.
Really? And yeah, it's okay to feed scraps like that, too?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
Maggie, you want to follow up?
Yeah, I was just, I guess, wondering if there's any, like, seed blends or varieties. Because it's not just that it hasn't just been happening with this bag of, or this batch of sunflower seeds. It seems to happen all the time, no matter, like, it just happens all the time. So I guess if there's another, like, seed variety or blend that would work better for house sparrows, just because that seems to be the majority of the birds that visit the bird feeder.
Interesting. I feel like most people want to avoid feeding the house sparrow. It's a very interesting perspective you have. I think that the house sparrows do like millet as well, which a lot of the other birds don't. So you could try a mix with millet. I don't think they go for safflower really.
We also have a brick of suet as well, but
the house sparrows
do not seem interested in that either.
No, they don't like the suet. No, they're more seed eaters. You may try some millet in there as well.
And crack corn.
All right.
Crack corn. Okay.
Cheap well, treat.
Maggie, thanks a lot for the call. It's Birding Today with Rich Guthrie at Julie Hart. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll get through a few emails right after the next break. Meantime, to Great Barrington and Beryl. Beryl, you're up.
Hey, how are you guys? Thanks. This is a great program for a rainy day.
Thank you.
I have a bunch of open-faced feeders. I've been feeding all summer. I'm down to pretty much dozens and dozens of finches, purple, gold, house, and morning doves, but they come by the dozen. And I have to go away for a couple weeks. I'm going to Europe and taking a group of yoga students on a retreat. And I want to know what I should do. Should I have somebody stay at the house and feed them every day? Can I wean them off by just throwing some stuff out on the ground for the next week or so, or just doesn't matter, just stop and feed them when I return?
Rich?
No, just go away.
Yeah, but come back.
No, they'll be fine. You know, they'll resort to their natural caches that they have, the wild fruits and berries that are out there. And they'll be waiting for you to come back happily.
I always feel so bad when they're sitting out there and I'm late getting out in the morning or something, and they just sit there on top of the shepherd hook.
Yeah. Sure, they know.
Okay, we're breakfast.
That's what my children do. It's incredible.
Yeah, they know a good thing, and they appreciate it. But I don't know how close you are to your neighbors, but they probably have other people that are treating them well as well. So, yeah, have a good time and watch for those bee eaters.
All right, enjoy the yoga, and thank you for the call. 800-348-2551. Let's grab one more before the next break. And it looked like Sloansville is the location. Pat is the person. Pat, you're on.
Okay, thank you. I drove in and out of our dead-end road twice today, and each trip there was a hen turkey right on the side of the road. It did not look healthy. The feathers were very rough. The head was a dull gray color instead of red. We have a lot of turkeys in this valley. We're on a tributary to the Schoharie Creek, right close to the creek. And this turkey did not look healthy. When it drove up on it the first time, I thought it was a black vulture, which we also have here, but it turned out not to be. It was a turkey, and like I said, it was on the side of the road, and it didn't try to get away from me when I drove up and stopped. It just is very quiet and not healy looking, it was there when I came in, and when I went out and came back in again. I don't want to do anything with it. I just wondered what the options are.
Okay. Well, panel, what do you think?
Well, it's that time of year for a lot of the adult birds out there to go through their annual molt. Mm-hmm. And that ain't a pleasant time of year for them. They're shedding all their feathers. They're growing in new ones. They have itchy, scratchy, scaly new pin feathers coming in, and they're trying to shake off the old ones. So, you know, she or the young he may be not happy at all. And the gray head color is just part of the non-male off-season colorations.
But, Julie, what about the lethargy and the not being afraid of people to come up to them?
Well, if they are molting, I mean, turkeys are very heavy birds, and they have a hard time, like, getting lift off the ground as it is. They're pretty reluctant to fly away. It could just be like, oh, I don't want to bother. Plus, they're not breeding right now, right? Like, they don't have their young. They're not trying to attract a mate. They could just be like, oh, I just want to hang out here and get some food. And so they're just like, whatever.
So it might be okay.
Yeah, I mean, we have turkeys in our yard that are super tame. They can become, like, totally used to people walking around them. And
I mean, we know black vultures have no fear of walking down sidewalks, and they're right there. Hey, how you doing? You know?
Untie your shoelaces on
me. Yeah, it's something. Pat, you want to follow up very quickly before we hit break?
No, it's just it was something that was interesting to me, that driving in and out.
Okay.
And it's an opportunity to call in.
So what happened to the bird? Have you seen it since?
I just got out of my car about 20 minutes ago.
Oh, this was today.
This was today. It was standing right on the side of the road.
Boy, I tell you what.
We have a lot of turkeys in this valley, and we've seen there looks like one clutch of young ones that run across the road all the time. It looks like almost 9 or 10 birds.
Wow.
That run across, and they're very active, but this one is conspicuous because it's so lethargic.
Hmm. Well, thank you for the call. We're overdue for a break. Let's do it. 800-348-2551. Oh, a little more Ronnie Earl here. What's this, lunch at R&M's, yeah? Am I wrong? Yeah, I'm right. All right, we'll take a break. Say, do you like the tomato pie? Do you like the pizza pie? Doing a live remote two weeks from today at DeFazio's 216 in Troy with my friend Rocco DeFazio and his son Matt. And we're going to make tomato pie, and we're going to take your questions. It's an invitation sort of to you to check out our website, wamc.org/on the road. You can find out how you can be a part of the studio audience. The best part is we're not going to record this. We're going to do it live, which means there are about 1,000 ways it can go wrong. So if you want to see me have just pop a vein in my head, come on over, because when things go wrong, I'm going to hit the ground. It'll be fun. WAMC.org/on the road at the Fazio's 216, 2 weeks from today, live broadcast. We might or might not be sending it to the Broadcasting Hall of Fame. It's Birding Today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. Here are a few emails, and then we'll get back to the phones. Rich writes in, not you, Rich.
No.
Different Rich, okay?
Different Rich.
To be clear. Seeing more hummingbirds around my house, my rows of Sharon bushes this year, than I've ever seen in the past. Is it just me watching more, or is there a greater abundance? And that's from Rich in Schenectady.
Transients, I would say. They've attracted to one of the more conspicuous flowers this time of year. And rows of Sharon attracts a lot of little insects, and hummingbirds will have a sort of like a side dish of insects while they're going after the nectar.
Okay. Julie?
Yeah, I mean, I've had like one hummingbird all summer at my feeders,
really?
And now I've suddenly got at least three. They're constantly chasing each other around and chasing them off. We just have the one feeder. So yeah, it's that time of year where we've got all the birds from further north of us that are stopping by and saying hello.
It's funny. We had so many when we had all of our bee balm blooming and everything, and now all that stuff is going away. I note there's one red flower on a side garden at our house. I don't even know what it is, but a hummingbird made a beeline for it yesterday. So if I had more red flowers, we could see some of these rare ones. But, you know, they're out there. Connie writes in, I live near the Meadowlands of New Jersey, and the other day I saw an osprey that had a red tail, like a red-tailed hawk's. What's going on there? Is it common? I'm quite certain it was an osprey. It flew right over me. And that's from Connie in the Meadowlands of Jersey.
I've never heard of such a thing. Something else was going on. I think it'd be a far-fetched for a osprey to have a red tail.
Could it be a mutant?
Could it be the, like, brown on a young bird, maybe, that looked reddish?
Yeah, but even they are sort of like have brown and white barring. So either it was carrying something in its talons, you know, perhaps, you know, there are huge goldfish down there in the Meadowlands, and it could have found one of those big goldfishes and was carrying that. And you were seeing what looked like a red tail was actually a goldfish, which is really red when you look at it.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a good guess. Let's go for a couple of more here, and then we'll go back to the phones. Let's see. Sheila says, I've noticed for the past few weeks there have been fewer birds coming to our feeder. I've seen a few finches, but not the usual blue jays, cardinals, chickadees, nuthatches. When I bring the feeder in at night, the seed has barely been touched, just about an inch down from the top. Is it common at this time of year?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, earlier in the year, you had lots of birds that were busy trying to take care of their young and feed their young. And so stopping by your feeder was like a really quick and easy way to get some food. But now all the young are independent. And so a lot of the birds have dispersed. Some of them are migrating away. Huh. And anyways, they're not as tied to the feeders at this time of year.
All right. Rita writes in, will common wild birds take care of my Japanese beetle infestation? After I put out a bird feeder to attract birds, I think the Japanese beetle population went way down, thank you. And that's from Rita.
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah. In fact, that was one of the benefits of having a house sparrows, back then known as English sparrows. The Japanese beetle was devastating a lot of our food crops in the earlier years.
Yeah.
And the English sparrows just discovered them and were feasting on it. And they seem to be doing the same things with the spotted lanternflies in our area, at least in my area. I've been watching that. So it's a learning curve, and let's hope it's working in the right direction.
All right, let's go back to our phones at 800-348-2551 to Pine Plains. Looks like it's John's turn. John, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have heard just recently, or I've noticed recently, this mournful sound or cry late at night, and I pulled out Merlin a couple of times, and it said an eastern screech owl, and that we were in the range, and yet on the other hand, it also said it was unlikely, and it was a striking, almost scary.
Yeah, they are scary.
Mournful cry.
Beautiful sound.
And beautiful sound, yes. And I'm just wondering why Merlin would say, identify it, and then say it's unlikely.
Merlin was wrong.
I mean, they identified it.
Yes, right about that, I suspect. But they are not scarce in our area. They're fairly common. They're just overlooked too easily.
Right.
There may be a dozen out there, and if you see one, you're lucky.
Yeah, I think that the eBird app...
Certainly didn't see it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and the Merlin and the eBird apps are basing the likelihood of seeing it based on what other people have submitted in your area.
Yeah.
So if other people haven't been reporting them, then it will show up as unlikely, even though there's probably one that's nesting there and is there year-round.
So. Julie, you live fairly in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
I hear them fairly often.
Yeah, we've had a couple times this summer where we've heard them, including some young ones that were going around, like, checking out the feeders in our backyard and everything.
Cool.
So, yeah, I've been hearing them just recently as well down my way. So this is the time of year when they start dividing the territory over winter. Territory.
And they stay for the winter.
They do, mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
Hey, John, thank you for the call. To Milford, Pennsylvania, and Rich. Rich, you're on.
Hello.
Hello, you're on, Rich.
Hi. I'm just calling because I learned about a Legion albatross that was first banded with a bird band in 1956. And in 2026, it was discovered laying eggs again on an atoll out in the Pacific Ocean. So this bird's at least 70 years old. And I believe that these albatross don't start to lay eggs until they're at least 5 years old. So the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service estimates this bird's at least 75 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I just called because I found that really fascinating. And it seems like we're finding, the more we study animals' ages, that we're finding all kinds of animals and birds that are much survive and are much older than we ever expected. I wonder if the panel has any comments about the ages of birds. I know locally we found some Louisiana water thrushes that were like 25 years old.
Exactly. And the way we can do that now, it's because we've abandoned them only recently. So you have to have a certain number of them that have a band put on them, live long enough, and then be found again. And these sort of, it's a rare occurrence because the sample is so few. But nonetheless, we keep making turns of pages as the information becomes more current.
70 years, Julie. That's an old bird.
Yeah, I believe her name is Wisdom, out on Midway Atoll. And every year it's
amazing.
Like, I get really anxious. Like, I hope she's found again. I hope she comes back again. I hope she's okay.
Yeah, she comes back every year.
Every year.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Rich, thanks really a lot for that one. 800-348-2551. Ed wrote in. Just to follow up from a few minutes ago, I heard that bread scraps are not good for birds, but you just mentioned it a few minutes ago that you can put them out. Can you help me understand what is okay for them?
Bread scraps.
Bread scraps?
Yeah.
I would say no bread scraps, personally.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. All right, let's have a fight. Now, Julie, you go first.
Well, I think a lot of bread that we eat has a lot of, like, sugar and other additives in there that aren't really what these birds would normally be eating and digesting. And so you can get, like, you know, pigeons and gulls and geese and stuff that they can get really fat and unhealthy if you're feeding them
like
all
people?
This artificial. Yeah, exactly, like people. Yeah. And so I think if you're going to feed the birds, then it should be something that they would normally be eating. But that's, yeah, my...
No. Rich,
yeah.
No.
No. Yeah, Rich disagrees.
Wow.
Well, they have a very high metabolism, and the sugar is going to be utilized as energy. And I'll tell you something. I know it's against the grain because somebody sometime not too long ago came out and said bread scraps are bad for birds, and everybody bought into it. It's not the case. I've been watching. I have a specific ringbill gull that has been coming back for 10 or more years.
Yeah, but have you checked its cholesterol?
I didn't have to because he's been coming back for 10 or more years, and he's as healthy and as feisty as the rest of the gull flock.
Yeah, nice.
And it's the same guy. I know it's the same one because we have an agreement, this gull and I.
Look,
there are other issues too with like any time you're feeding birds, like even me, like with my bird feeders in my backyard, right? Like you're attracting other things to your yard. You know, you could have like rodents, you could have bears. If you're feeding geese at a pond, you can have a lot more geese, and then they're defecating in the water and causing bacteria loads to grow. And, you know, like there's a lot of other repercussions.
Sure,
so
that
you
goes
need
with
to
any
be...
of the bird foods.
Yeah.
Not only bread. And my rule is no leftovers. Just don't leave anything behind for those night piranhas to come
Listen,
out and find.
Mm-hmm. This has been contentious, and I want you two just to agree to be kind to each other for the rest of the show, okay?
Yes, I know which side the bread is buttered on. And,
all right.
And there's also whole wheat bread out there. You don't have to go with enriched
wheat. Yeah, if you make the bread yourself and you know what's in it, then okay.
Right.
But, yeah.
Well, we exhausted this topic. Let's go to Jeffrey in Hobart. Jeffrey, go ahead.
Hey, Jeffrey.
I just wanted to make a comment on the gal that was talking about the ravens. I got ravens around me, and a really good way to distinguish them between crows is crows tend to flap their wings quite a bit more than a raven. Ravens kind of lumber, and they got much thicker necks, so when you see them in silhouette, you know what I mean? And then, of course, their voice, a crow is, ah, 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 and a raven is, ah, ah, ah.
So
wait, I thought the raven was.
Well, they make many noises.
They do, yeah. I mean, cat and everything. But anyway, I thought I'd throw that out.
That's interesting. You know what? Now you have a great seg into Rich Guthrie doing his imitations of these birds too. So Jeffrey, thank you for this. This is the type of radio that wins me awards. All right, Rich, let's hear the crow. Okay, and what was he saying?
He's saying, "Hey there, Ray. How are you?"
Now, what about the raven? Quoth the raven.
And they also have other sounds.
What about the fish crow? Fish crow.
We have the fish crow. Yes.
All right, go ahead.
Ka, ka. Ka, ka.
So I went right to Spencer, and he must be saying, "What the blue blazes is going on?"
What's
Spencer
happening?
In Kingston, you're on. Go ahead.
Actually, Nevermore came to my mind, but that's okay.
I say once more.
Go ahead, man.
So we have Rosa Sharon out by our porch, which is wonderful. Every evening we see this amazing hummingbird show. Many of them visit at the same time. They're okay as long as they don't see each other. My question is, do the Rosa Sharon produce enough nectar every day for these hummingbirds?
I love this.
Yeah, I don't think so. But they kind of look like a puffy, dry flower to me. But
I think they produce some nectar. But, probably visiting a bunch of different flowers, not just them.
And the bugs.
Okay, and I have a possible solution for your yellow jackets at the hummingbird feeder as well.
Go ahead.
I've had great success. Well, the yellow jackets are not aggressive towards humans this time of year. They're interested in their sugar, and that's it. I've had great success when having picnics with family to take a piece of sliced apple, get one yellow jacket interested in actually landing on it, then take that piece of sliced apple and set it off to the side of the picnic table somewhere, and he'll let all the other yellow jackets in the area know about it, and they all come to the apple and leave you alone.
Wow.
Nice.
Wow. Did you ever try that, either of you?
Not explicitly. I've seen it done with meat, too. Like if you put a piece of meat out, the yellow jackets love meat, and they'll go over there instead of to whatever you're...
I ran away from my peanut butter and jelly sandwich as a kid. I don't know if it worked. They found me again, too.
Ah, well, there you go. Spencer, do you want to make any imitations while you're here?
No.
No? All right, well, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for playing. Richard and Rensselaer, you have about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I'd like you to identify a bird for me. It's got a black head and neck. It's a little smaller than a cardinal. The back of it is a dark gray with some white spots on it. It was pecking vigorously in the ground, and its head jerks forward like pigeons does when it walks.
Slowly again. Yeah. We have enough time.
Yeah. Black head.
Are you sure it's black and all that color stuff? You know, because something like that, would be a...
Black head and neck, and then the body is a dark gray with some white spots.
Well, maybe a towhee.
It's on the ground pecking.
Oh, a towhee.
A towhee, but they have a white bottom, belly, that is, and a black head and back and white spots on it, and flashy white spots on their tail when they fly away. But they're kind of more like a scratchy bird than a pecky bird.
Yeah, and they're the same size as a cardinal.
So get a picture.
Starling? Could it be a starling? No, because they're all dark.
Yeah.
I mean, could it be a juvenile of something?
Also, I was trying to think of like a cowbird that's transitioning,
but
they don't have
tiny
white.
Yeah, they don't have white either.
Well,
but
Richard, this is a stumper. Man, I mean, it's the end of the show, and you have the mystery going.
You're going to have me troubled
for
the next month.
Yeah, that's interesting.
All right, well, you've troubled Rich, and now I think we should probably end the show. So there we go. Richard Guthrie, how do people get in touch with you?
My name, middle initial P. Richard P. as in Peter Guthrie. @gmail.com.
Now, a common problem is people spell Guthrie the wrong way. How do you spell Guthrie?
There's only one right way.
Oh,
G-U-T-H-R-I-E.
Okay, fair enough. And Julie Hart, do you want people to bother you, or you just want to be left alone?
That's fine. They can reach me at julie.hart@dec.ny.gov.
You two are fantastic, and we'll do it again next month. Support comes from Bittersweet Blackbird, Clifton Park, New York. A woman-owned and operated tattoo studio creating custom artistic designs tailored for each client. Appointments only, bittersweetblackbird.com. And Capital Roots Autumn Evening, a strolling supper at the Hilton Garden Inn in Troy, Wednesday, September 23rd, with proceeds benefiting Capital Roots food access and urban greening work. Capitalroots.org. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart for being here today. They come every month, so if you didn't get your question in, and there were a lot of people who did not, you know, try a little earlier. We'll do what we can. We'll try to get through as many questions as we can. We'll do this next month. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Bowen. Owen O'Leary screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Real Estate. Renata Lewis and Alex Monticello will be here. We'll see you at 2:00.